Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt podcast, your home for deer hunting news, stories, and strategies. And now, your host, Mark Kenyon.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt podcast. I'm your host, Mark Kenyon, and this is episode number 3. Today, we're going to be talking about scouting and hunting heavily pressured whitetails. And joining us is big buck killing legend Dan Infault of thehuntingbeast.com. This is gonna be good, so stick around. All right, joining me, of course, is my pal, Dallas Fort Worth. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing pretty good. I have a beer right next to me that I will be drinking throughout this podcast, so I'm good to go.
Excellent. I just finished off my first one of the night, so we're both in good shape. And for the listeners out there, I'm referring to you as Dallas Fort Worth today because we have another Dan on the line. As I mentioned, we've got a special guest today. This is Dan Infault of thehuntingbeast.com. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Hi, guys.
We're super glad you could join us. And for all the listeners out there who maybe aren't familiar with who you are, Dan, I know you are the creator of thehuntingbeast.com, which is a super popular message board and forum for hardcore hunters. And you've really developed quite a following of people that are interested in how you hunt and how you go about things. I first found out about you from couple of my buddies who've been following your forum and really love it. And I also saw your DVDs hunting marsh bucks and hunting hill country bucks, which were, you know, super informative. That said, we want to get you on the show here today to talk a little about scouting. I know that's a big part of how you've had your success in the past, and we kind of wanted to better understand how you go about scouting, how that helps you, and maybe how that's helped you really develop the type of strategies that help you kill so many big bucks you've gotten in the past. Does that sound like a good plan?
Sure.
Awesome. So maybe just to kick things right off then, you know, Dan, can you start off by explaining to us, you know, why you believe that spring scouting is so important for the hardcore whitetail hunter?
Well, there's a few reasons for that. I think the best time you can scout, you know, for deer is during the season if you tagged out, you know, when the deer are in their patterns right then. But usually I'm never tagged out. I'm always holding out or something.
Right.
I usually got someplace to go or whatever. But spring, as soon as that snow melts, if you're in the north country, all the sign is preserved under that snow from the fall. You can see the deer beds. You can, you know, you can see rubs and scrapes for a quarter mile because there's no granary. And it makes scouting a little faster and more effective. And I don't have to worry about bumping the deer out of their beds and stuff and have them get buggy for a month or two. You know, I can go in there and get in these bedding areas and stuff and really figure out these deer, how they get in and out of their areas and not spook them to the point where it's going to affect them in the fall, you know. And I think the biggest thing is when everything starts turning green, you really can't see in the woods well, right? You know.
That makes all the sense in the world. I have done a little bit of scouting already this year, but, you know, do you do any scouting right after the season when there is still any snow on the ground?
I'm always scouting.
Okay. Yep, not a bad idea at all. Now, so let's say you're heading out there this time of year before green up. what exactly are you looking for? Maybe take us through what a day of scouting looks like for you, Dan.
For me, I usually start out on the internet. If I'm looking at marshes or swamps, I'm usually looking at aerials.
Okay.
And if I'm looking at farmland, I'm usually looking at aerials and topos. And if I'm looking at hilly country, I'm looking at topos. So I'm going over that stuff, and I'm looking for areas where I think look like deer bedding. And I go straight to those areas and skip most of the rest of the woods, because my main interest in scouting at this time of the year is where big bucks bed. And I think that differs a lot from other people in the hunting industry. I'm hunting mostly public land and pressured whitetail, so I want to get close to those deer where they're bedded, because they don't move far in daylight, you know, at least the mature ones. So I'm finding the bedding areas, and I want to be able at this time of the year to get in those beds, right in that bed, not worry about spooking that deer out of there, and be able to look from the deer's point of view and think about why he's bedded there, you know, what wind he's going to be bedded there on, what he can see, what he can smell, and what he can hear. And I'm going to look out from his point of view and look at the exit trail that comes out of his bedding area.
Okay.
And I'm going to look and see how far I can see, you know, and think about what I can smell and hear. And I want to get just beyond that point from that bed. And that's where I want to set up. You know, a lot of these big bucks that I shoot, I'm shooting them, you know, within the last 15, 20 minutes of shooting hours.
Okay.
And I'm only 100 yards from their bed.
Wow.
So if guys are sitting up on, you know, trails and scrapes and stuff like that, that you're reading about in magazines and stuff, you're really setting up most of the time, probably on night sign.
Right. So that said then, do you pay, you know, really any attention to that kind of sign at all then, rubs, scrapes, et cetera?
Only if it's associated with bedding, or if I'm planning on rut hunting.
Okay. Now, in regards to finding those beds, you mentioned that you actually will get down in them and look around, and then you look for that area maybe 100 yards away or so where you might be able to get just out of sight or sound. Do you, when you're actually out scouting, is that when you go and find those possible stand locations? You'll go out there, find that 70-yard away or 100-yard away tree and figure it out right then and there how you can hunt it?
Correct. I think that's really important. I think a lot of guys, when they first start out, looking at bedding areas, they get all excited about what they see, and they leave, and they realize they really don't have a good setup, or they don't have a down pat. You know, they come back in and they're surprised when they kick satellite deer or something out. I want to know the whole area real well, so I, you know, when I find something good or hot, I get in there and really scout it out. You get a lot of times, like when a mature buck goes into a bedding area, there's what I call satellite bedding. See, a lot of guys have the impression that a big buck bed is used by one big buck, and it's not. Those bucks pick a specific location for a specific reason, and multiple bucks will use those beds. And what happens is sometimes if it's a good location, multiple deer will show up. The dominant animal is going to get that bed, and there's satellite bedding around them. So there'll be multiple beds. And if you're set up on that main bed and you're not taking into account that there's other beds in the area, you might be bumping the deer going in.
So are these satellite beds then other bucks, or could that be also possibly be doe bedding?
Well, it can be doe bedding, but what I was referring to was other bucks. But those do often bed adjacent to bucks. Like when you look at points in hilly country where the bucks bed right on the tip of a point, does often bed up on the top of the hill. I mean, it happens a lot. You know, probably 70-80% of the beds they find on points, there's does bedded up closer where you want to hunt that have to be taken into consideration.
Okay, so that gives another great segue into another question I had too. You know, how do you identify a buck bedding area? A lot of people ask us about that, and I've you know, read some of your articles and heard some of the things you've had to say, so I've got a high level idea of that. But can you talk to us a little bit about how someone can go about identifying a buck bedding area? And then secondly, where should people be looking for those?
Okay. Doe bedding seems a little more random, in that they don't always lay in the exact same spots. They can, but they usually don't. They usually bed in a group, and they're usually in a circle fashion. with an each looking in a different direction. They use their eyes and hearing more than they use their nose and stuff. Bucks are solitary animals. They worry about number one. Even if they're with other animals, they're still worried about themselves, not the other animals. When they go and they bed, when you look at a buck bed, you're going to say, wow, this is the ideal setup. When you start considering the wind and the sight advantages and the hearing, they take everything into account and they bed in a specific spot for a specific reason. That's how I can predict bedding from a map, because it's repetitive. They're looking for exact conditions. So you find those buck beds in certain locales, you know, right where they should be. And, you know, another thing that you see a lot with newbies or guys that don't have the experience is they say there's beds everywhere in the woods, you know, when they're in a good property or something. You know, I don't know where to go. You know, there's beds all over the place.
Right.
Well, those mature bucks that are dominant are going to obtain those beds that are in the specific locations, you know, due to, you know, a point on a hill or those marsh islands or whatever, but they're going to be in the best spots, the spots you can pick out on the maps.
And so are those best spots, then, if I understand you correctly, from a buck's point of view, those best spots are something that gives them good cover, but also where they can see maybe in front of them or around them so they can identify any danger that might be approaching, and then usually they'll have the wind to their back. Is that accurate?
Correct. They're looking downwind, and they like to put an obstacle against their back. So if you find a bed and there's like a fallen tree behind it,
mm-hmm.
The fallen tree is behind the deer, and the deer's looking away from that tree, and the wind is blowing up to that tree and across the deer while he's looking downwind. So you can tell what wind direction he beds there on.
Okay, so if I'm walking through, you know, one of my properties and I come up on one of these points maybe that looks like it could be a great bedding area for a buck. You know, what I've always thought when I'm looking for buck bedding areas is I'm looking for, like you said, that perfect spot, that ideal spot, but then maybe also looking for maybe a cluster of rubs around a possible bedding area. Is that right? Should I be doing that? And then secondly, is there anything else that might help me say, yes, this bed for sure is a buck?
That's a multiple of questions.
Trying to throw you a hard one there.
Well, when a buck bed's on a point, I don't think we mentioned this, but like those hilly points, the wind's blowing down the point. So those point beds aren't as worn in as some more permanent beds, because if the wind is shifted just a little bit to one way, the bed on the other side of the point.
Okay.
You know, they rotate around those points, and that's why they choose points. It's because they can get away with multiple winds, so they can get up and move if the wind shifts. So there's usually beds all the way around the point. And I see a lot of guys in hill country set up always with the wind in their face. So they're setting up high, you know, up on the hilltop.
Right.
And if the bucks are bedding on the downwind side, they're hunting on the upwind side, and they're never seeing deer. They're going back and forth to the wrong side every time they set up. If that makes sense to you. Yeah. I don't know if I said that right, but
no, it does.
What you're saying about rubs now being in the bedding area,
mm-hmm.
I get a lot of discussions about that. And, you know, I hunt a variety of properties. I occasionally hunt managed land. I hunt some private, and I hunt a lot of public, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I hunt a lot of stuff that has very few big bucks, and you're after one specific animal, and stuff that's got multiple big animals. And what I'm seeing is areas that have a lot of buck activity or a high population of bucks and few bedding areas. There's more of a competition for those bedding areas, and that's when they seem to mark the bedding areas. But some of the properties I hunt that are public or really pressured, those bedding areas, even though I kill bucks out of them every couple of years, the same bedding area, don't have any rubs in them.
Hmm.
I think it's very much competition for those beds.
Wow.
So the rubs don't always tell the picture. But obviously, if there's a rub right in the bed, it's a buck bed. A lot of times, those mature bucks too, and I don't know if they're smart or what it is, but I know that the rubs often don't start for 25 yards away from the bed. But there are, you know, I don't want to say they don't rub in the beds, because they do. In high population areas, you'll find rubs all around the bedding areas and right in the beds. Or if you find like the best bed in the area, it'll be like that. But you can also find beds that don't have any rubs in them. And I recall the biggest buck I ever shot was in the mid-180s, a big non-typical. Wow. And he was bedding under this willow tree, and I watched him there for 2 years. It was an open, grassy area. I tried to kill this thing. I got one of his sheds that I found actually right in that bed. And I watched that buck in that bed from a distance, trying to get him to go far enough in daylight to kill him for, you know, a whole season and a half, probably.
Jeez.
And when I finally killed him by crawling up to him and shooting him in that bed with a shotgun.
Wow.
But my point is about that buck is any time there was a west wind, he was bedded there. There wasn't a scrape or rub within 100 yards of that bed.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater. Pay attention here because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months, wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks, or you open your medical emergency kit. You match your symptoms to the doctor recommended prescription and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. Plus, a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor, no waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meateater, but you got to use the promo code meateater. That's promo code meateater, okay, at twc.health/meateater.
So did you just, knew that was his bed because you'd seen him there once before, or did you actually scout that area?
I found the bed and was watching the bed and looking for that buck, and I found his tracks coming out of there, and I glassed him coming out of there from a distance and put two and two together. I already knew about the bed, but I knew he was using it when I seen him come out of there.
Okay. That makes sense. Speaking of, you just mentioned tracks. How much do you, scout for tracks, either in this time of year or later in the year?
Well, I put a lot into tracks. If I find a track that's bigger than four fingers laying down next to it and it's a walking track, mm-hmm. that's a big animal. That's something I'm interested in. And, if a lot of guys say, I don't know where to look on my property. If you're not finding any big rubs or any big tracks, go find a different property because there's no big bucks there. So you gotta take those tracks and rubs into account.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Dallas, do you have any follow-up questions on any of that?
As far as scouting is concerned, I live about an hour and 20 minutes away from the properties that I'm able to hunt. And yes, I get down there and I'm able to scout a little bit and not as much as I'd like to, but I live and die by trail cameras over top of sign. And that's typically how I've hunted in the past because my deer don't stay on the property the entire year. They move from property to property, and they don't, you know. So I have some in the spring that show up when I start running my trail cameras, and then after the crops are harvested in a certain area, it's like they disperse and they go into different locations. So my question to you is, do you use trail cameras a lot in your scouting?
I do somewhat on the private lands I hunt, and I've got kind of a different method to it. I like to hold my cameras back a little bit, not put them near the bedding where I'm going to hunt or in my hunting areas. And I leave my hunt spot, my kill spot, completely alone until I'm ready to move in for the kill. I put those cameras back where I figure that buck is feeding at night, like in a field or a crop field or an acorn flat or something like that. And when that buck shows up, and I know he's on the property because it's within, let's say, an hour before daylight or an hour after dark, that tells me that buck's around somewhere. And then I can start deciphering, well, what bedding area did he come out of, and move in for the kill. You know, so I do use trail cameras, and I do sit back and wait for that intel. And I also use the tracks, as Mark was talking about, you know, looking in a field that's adjacent to bedding where bucks tolerate my scent, finding those tracks, and when the buck's track shows up, then moving in for the kill.
Okay. All right. And then the other question I have is, and this kind of brings, when you were talking about that one buck under that willow tree for 2 years, you watched him. How many different times did you change your stand location? Well, I know you shot him from the ground with a shotgun, but before that, how many times did you change your stand location to better your options of getting him coming or going to the bed?
Probably about 10 times, but there was one tree I sat in real often, which isn't my nature, but it was an observation stand where I could see the bed. Because when I can see a deer like that, a lot of the time, I sit back and just watch them, even in a spot where I can't possibly kill them, because I wait for that, you know, they get these patterns going, and I wait for them to be getting out far enough in daylight, and when I observe it, the next day I move in for the kill. I just wasn't observing it with that animal.
Okay.
He wasn't getting far enough. But in that case, there was one tree I was sitting an awful lot because I had a real good view of the bed, but I had no chance of killing him from there, but I could see where he goes.
I got
that. Makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Definitely. Definitely.
So kind of along that same line, you mentioned that sometimes when you're using trail cameras during the season, you will check also for tracks around a food source to determine, okay, if the big deer is using this food source, and then try to figure out where they're bedding from there. How much of that in-season scouting are you doing? And is it just to that extent? Is all you do at that point just going to be walking a field edge, checking trail cameras to see what food source they're using? Or do you dive in any deeper at all to scout at that time?
I do all kinds of scouting, you know, in-season. I try to be a little bit less intrusive during season because I don't want to burn out my areas. But if I got some idea where a big buck is, I'll try and move in and guess bedding set up on them. I'll shine, you know, in Wisconsin, that's legal. I'll shine and look for them.
Okay.
I'll set up a trail camera. On my way to my stands, I'm scouting all the way in, scouting all the way back. Quite often, I don't make it to where I'm even going. You know, if I have a stand in mind, on the way, if I run into a sign, I might set up someplace else. Just areas I'll swing past, and if a certain rub line is opened up or something, I'll say, oh, that means there's a buck in that bedding area. And then I'll shift over to the bedding area and set up, you know. So scouting is always a part of what I do, but it's, you know, pretty wide open to how I scout. I mean, there's a lot of different variations.
Right. So if I understand this correctly, then you are using maybe a sign like a rub or maybe a bunch of scrapes to say, hey, there's a big buck in the area right now and it's hot. But then, unlike most people who might set up a stand right over that rub, you're instead going back to the previous knowledge you have of nearby bedding areas and then moving in on those. Is that right?
Correct. You know, let's look at it like this once. Two seasons ago, in my hometown, there was a real big buck that was living in Rome Pond Marsh. Everybody in town was after him. Everybody was talking about him. Real big 10-pointer. And the first season I went after him, I saw him a couple times shining, and I knew a real good bedding area. Every time there's a big buck in the area, I was seeing him holes up in there. And when I finally started seeing him near that bedding area, I moved in for the kill, and as I was getting to the bedding area, it was pre-rut. He got up with a doe and took off, so I didn't get him. I was so confident I had that thing's bedding area pegged that the next year he was across the street on private land, on some private managed land, and I was watching him and watching him and watching him, and he wasn't coming over. And then all of a sudden I heard some rumors going around that people were shining him and things. Mm-hmm. I just went out and checked his rub line, saw his rub line was opened up, and his rub line was in his starts, let's say, 200 yards from his bed. But I know where he's bedding if he's using those rubs. And when I went out there to hunt, the first day I hunted him that season, as soon as I saw those rubs, it was the next day or something, and as soon as the wind blew the right direction, I went out there, and there was like 3 tree stands over the rub line. I had to walk past a guy in a tent. I had to walk past another guy in a tree, get up to this thing's bedding area, and sneak up a tree 75 yards from the bed. And he got up out of the exact bed I thought he was going to get up out of, came under me, and I shot him under my tree 75 yards from his bed. It was October 31st, Halloween day, and it was closing time when I shot him 75 yards from his bed.
Wow.
You know, if you were sitting on those rubs, you didn't have a chance. Now, there was young bucks running all over the place. I mean, those guys could shoot those.
Right.
But this mature buck, he wasn't even in the rut. Under that kind of pressure, he wasn't moving until the last, 20 minutes or so. And by the time he got to me, it was closing time when I shot him. But his rubs were nowhere around that bed.
So when you're moving in on these bedding areas that you've already identified, is it any given time of day, will you sneak into a bedding area in the morning, or is it only in the afternoon? Or how do you go about deciding when it's worth the risk of moving in there or moving closer?
The actual buck beds, the best time to hunt them is in the evening. And the reason for that is mature bucks often bed before daylight. And they often come in with the wind to their nose to the beds. But they don't actually leave like that. So they'll circle a bedding area and then come in with the, wind to the nose. So you got to be where they circle. And the wind changes a little every day. So where exactly they come into that bed changes a little every day. And, I mean, you can beat that a little bit by getting high up a tree. But most of the time when I go into those beds, if the buck shows up, he's there before I get there, he kicks out of the bed in the darkness.
Right.
Or he comes in before it's light enough to shoot him and senses me before I have a shot. I still hunt mornings, and I'm still successful every now and then in the mornings, but I only hunt the spots that there's no way I can get close enough to in the evening because my success rate is so much higher in the evenings.
And do you usually have, I know I've heard a lot about you being pretty mobile. Are you ever setting up your stand with a climber or stand and sticks that night when you're going in to hunt one of these bedding areas? Or do you already have stands up and going earlier in the year for most of these spots?
Right now I'm probably at about 95 or 96% mobile, where I set up my stand every time I go out. And I'm setting them up really close to these bucks. I do have some permanents out now. As I'm getting older, it's getting a little easier on the private land, but they're in set positions, and they're usually not where I killed a big buck. Usually I see the buck from them and move to them. But I do kill some bucks from permanents, but not very many. Most of the stuff is the first time in for the year, and most of my biggest bucks are the first time I ever sat the stand.
Wow. Now, when you're setting these stands up, being so close to a bedding area, is it just that you just take a lot of time and be really careful to be quiet, or is there anything you do special to your equipment or anything to help you be a little more stealthy?
Yeah, I cover my sticks and my stand perimeter with a product called Stealth Strips. That's made by a guy out of Michigan.
Okay.
It's a micro fleece that doesn't absorb water, and it's got a really sticky backing, and you can't get the stuff back off after you put it on, but it absorbs sound. There's no clink to it and such. And I especially want to cover the spot where I know a lot of the guys, probably a lot of you guys listening to, use like the lone wolf stands, mm-hmm. where the seat claps into the bottom. You know, you get that metal on metal contact.
Right.
Yeah.
I always got something between there. I mean, no matter what, even before the Stealth strips, I had wads of tape in there. And when I get about 100 yards from the bed, I don't think everybody has to do this, but this works for me. Doesn't mean it'll work for you, but it does for me. You know, in this fast-paced society, you know, I'm walking Speedy Gonzales everywhere I go, and when I get about 100 yards from the bed, I actually have to stop and sit down and just relax for a minute and then settle down and then really get my game on for going slow. And I plan my route as I'm going. I'm looking where I'm going to step. I'm looking ahead of myself. What can I get away with? Is there a log I can walk on where I'm not crunching leaves and stuff? And if I make a noise, I stop and wait, you know, for a while before I move forward. When I get to the tree, I try to keep the tree between me and the bed. And so I can look at the bed as I'm climbing. And I can watch over there and, you know, and have the camouflage of the tree in between me. And when I set up the stand, I set it up, you know, around the tree in front of me. And then I'm looking forward for the right time and stuff, and I'm moving, I step into the stand and ready to hunt.
Well, I got to believe that'd be some pretty high-stress tree stand prep. I think my heart would be beating a million miles a minute just thinking there might be a giant buck 70, 80, 100 yards away.
I can remember one time about 10 or 15 years ago, I went out after a snowstorm bull hunting and caught a big track. And the snow had stopped about 2 hours before daylight. And my goal was to cut a big track, follow with the bedding, and set up on it. You know, so I knew this buck was going to bedding. I mean, the snow had only been on the ground a couple hours. So I followed this big track into a point, and you could see an island out there in the cattails. And I'm thinking, oh, I got this thing. When he comes out of there, there's only one way out the way he went in. I got him. So I climb up this tree, and I get way up high, so you know, I won't have any wind problems and stuff or scent problems. And I get up there and get that thing set up, and I pull my bow up, and I turn around and sit down and look out. And I'm looking straight down into that island at that buck looking up at me with his big rack. And it felt so stupid. And you know, that's going to happen when you do stuff like this. But that's the kind of things with me that really teach a lesson. You know, when I shoot a buck or something, that's not the thing that teaches me something. When I fail, that's what teaches me something.
Sure.
You know, I learned that day that I really got to pay attention to what's going on around me. I mean, be careful climbing a tree. I mean, look at what's going on. You know, and a lot of times now I'm hunting, you know, 6-8 feet off the ground so that the deer don't see me from his bed looking up.
Right. Makes sense. So speaking of that, then also how often, maybe some of the time you won't realize this, but how often do you think you end up spooking these bucks out of their beds? It seems like pretty high risk, high reward type proposition, the way that you're hunting these deer. How often do you think that happens, or do you feel like you've minimized that to a degree given your experience?
Well, it probably happens a couple times every year that I know of, and probably even more than that I don't. I think the majority of the time I don't, because I'm so aware of where the bedding area is. You know, if you know where they're bedded, there should be no problem there. What usually catches me is if they moved a little bit, if they shifted. Last year I was hunting one that was bedding in a little bedding area adjacent to an island. And while I was climbing up, you know, sneaking through the island, he gets up right in front of me, bedded on the island.
Jeez.
You know, so that happens, you know, but, I think, you got to look at it from a different mindset. I mean, everybody's so worried about spooking those deer that they put themselves out of the game by putting themselves too far back. If you don't occasionally see a tail jump up in front of you and don't occasionally hear one crash off and go, oh, I'm so stupid. If you don't occasionally do that, you're not pushing the envelope far enough.
Yeah. How many?
You're probably not killing very many either.
Yeah, you're probably right. How many chances do you think you usually have with a buck like that? And I know you're hunting pretty heavily pressured ground. Is it usually a one and done thing? If you spook it, he's probably long gone or turned nocturnal. Or have you ever had second chances?
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater. Pay attention here, because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options, like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months, wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks, or you open your medical emergency kit. You match your symptoms to the doctor recommended prescription and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. Plus, a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor, no waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meateater, but you got to use the promo code meateater. That's promo code meateater, okay, at twc.health/meateater.
You know, that's a hard one to answer. I get second chances. I think a lot of the time it's buck specific. Each buck has a different paranoia and stuff. They're like people. You know, one buck might tolerate you going into his veterinary 4 days in a row. One might tolerate it once and he's gone.
Right.
If I see a buck in a veterinary and I don't get a shot, I'm there the next day. Or the next day I have the right wind. And the one I was just talking about that was on that island, he got up, ran off into the cattails. That was about a 150-inch 10-pointer, and that was on public land.
Nice.
I heard him run into his cattails and kind of stop, and I stood there for a second thinking about it, and I thought, well, I got the wind in my favor. He saw me, you know. He saw me from where he was bedding. So I thought, you know, I'm okay with that. It's when they smell you that they really spook. He doesn't know exactly what he was looking at. He just knew it didn't belong there. So I crept up and set up in the tree anyways, and at dark, he came in, and I almost shot him.
Wow.
That night. From just in the cattails, all he did was move to the next bedding area. But I've also had it, you know, there's one time I kicked this really nice buck out of a bedding area that I didn't even know existed until I kicked him out of there. But I kick him out of this clump of brush that he had a bed under it, and he runs off, and I'm thinking, wow, I didn't know a buck was bedding there. You know, the next day I come through there, because it was a nice place to traverse into this marsh.
Mm-hmm.
Next day I come through there and kick that same buck out of that bed, and I think, God, I should sit up over the top of that thing. You know, now he's out of here for sure. The next day, I kicked a damn buck out of that bed again.
So, wow.
The fourth day, I sat there like a fool, and he never came back.
That's how it goes, right?
Now,
right.
I have a question in regards to public hunting land. Now, I know a lot of our listeners will probably be hunting public land. I myself have had enough experiences with public hunting land that I just have kind of not done it. But how can you use other hunters in high-pressured, you know, public land situations, heck, or even private land situations where you're sharing a hunting property with another hunter? How can you use another hunter as an advantage to you when going into these properties?
Well, that's a real good question, and one people should look at a little closer, because most hunters go out and they look for stuff that looks like deer hunting. I mean, they look for the big woods where they can set up the tree stands. They look for rub lines. They look for scrapes and stuff. And they go out to the centers of these woods. And what I look for is what doesn't look like that. I'm looking for what everybody's ignoring or overlooking. A lot of these real big bucks I'm shooting in public are right alongside the road, you know, adjacent to the parking lots. Nobody even looks because they all go out a little ways and start splitting off. Or they're someplace that just doesn't look like it should hold a deer. You know, it's an acre patch of trees. You know, everybody walks past it to go to the big forest or something. I'm trying to find those overlooked spots because I think the way a buck works is they avoid human scent. And where all these people go, they keep smelling humans, they stay away from. So if you think about where does nobody go, that's where the big bucks usually are.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Now, far from the scouting and hunting aspect, I have a question in regards to ethics and sharing a hunting property. You hunt public land, so you probably run into people all the time out there. Mm-hmm. Is there a code of ethics that needs to be followed on public hunting ground as far as, you know, okay, there's a guy here, maybe I should stay away from him, maybe I shouldn't, you know, go into that area, or is it more of a every man for himself type scenario?
I think the way it works is every man for itself. Maybe there should be some ethics involved. But I run into a lot of people who have no ethics.
Yeah.
Or don't understand it. Let's say, you know,
okay.
My personal, feeling is if somebody's hunting there, I move on. If they're actively hunting, I mean, there's not too many spots in a public area that haven't been hunted. So, I mean, if you said you weren't going to go anywhere where somebody else hunted, you wouldn't be hunting.
Yeah.
But, if you run into somebody, they were there first, you leave kind of thing. You make a noise. If somebody's walking up on you, they turn around and walk out usually. But my opinion is if you're running into other hunters in the spot that you're going, you're probably in the wrong spot. That's not where the big buck is, if a big buck is what you're after.
I gotcha. I gotcha.
Follow-up question to that, too, then. Back to scouting. Do you scout at all preseason or during the season? Do you specifically ever look for sign of other hunters? And do you use that? I mean, it sounds like you do use that to your advantage. But is there anything specific you look for when trying to identify where another hunter might be other than, you know, just seeing him or his tree stand?
Yeah, dry land and easy access. Usually they leave signs, but I can generally look at a map and just block off where I think hunters are going. I like wet stuff. I like thick stuff where people don't want to climb through the stuff. There's not straight trees to put a climber in, you know, that kind of stuff. There's sign of hunters wherever there are, you know, like if you go into a woods that really gets pounded, I mean, there's tacks in all the trees, there's right. Scent bottles laying on the ground, but I would never even end up in that woods because you can look at the property and know where they're going to be. If somebody's looking for the ideal public land property, they don't want a dry, open woods because guys can go everywhere. I mean, that varies. If you get out like say Iowa or some portions of western Wisconsin or where not a lot of hunter pressure is, you can get on a good property that's wooded by looking for areas that are public that are far away from campgrounds and motels and towns. But if you're near a large population of people like where I live, I'm looking for wet ground. I'm looking for swamps and marshes and stuff that have some dry ground, a lot of wet, because most hunters won't go through water. They won't wade out to the stuff. A lot of the stands I go to, I go through waist-deep water to get to them.
Jeez. Speaking of the water, too, I know you mentioned this a little bit a couple different times while you were telling some of the different experiences you've had, but when it comes to hunting those marshy situations, what do you look for when it comes to bedding areas? I think, you know, what I've seen so far is where there's high ground, you're going to find some bedding areas. But is that all there is when it comes to trying to find and trying to scout those swampy areas, or is there more to it?
Well, when you look at marshy areas, the best terrain for a newbie is a cattail marsh. They're super easy to read. And the reason they are is because you can see it right in front of your face. Anything that's not a cattail out there is potentially a bed. I mean, if it's actually a cattail marsh, not dogwood or, you know, if it's cattails,
right.
If you got islands out there, if you got little points that go into the cattails off of mainlands, the beds are going to be on those points. you got an island out there, if there's some little brush tapering off into the cattails, there's going to be a bed in there. If you see a couple of trees all by themselves on the cattails, go to them, there's a bed under them. You see a big willow tree right on the edge of the cattails that's surrounded by brush, there's going to be a bed underneath it. Real easy to see, real easy to learn from. What's hard for guys is when they get to a big swamp, like a dogwood swamp that's got a lot of tamarack in it and stuff. They look around and they see everything looks the same. I don't know, you know, what to do. But really, it's just like that cattail marsh, only you can't see it for 100 yards. So you're looking for those high spots. You're looking for those points that go off into the dogwood or out of the tamaracks and stuff. And you're looking for that edge, you know, the transition between trees and the dogwood or the dogwood and cattails. And, you know, so it's all the same, basically. It's just that it's harder to look at it in that, swampy section.
Okay. And can you ever see some of those things even from, like, an aerial map or Google Maps? I've tried to do that to a degree, and I think I've found some of those spots, but do you use that at all?
Oh, absolutely. I've gotten it down, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years. So, you know, I got it down to a point now where I can look at one of those swamps or marshes and stuff and pretty much pinpoint where the bedding is. And when I go out and scout it, it's right where I expect it to be.
Wow. I can't say I'm quite that good yet.
I am way far away from that.
Yeah, I guess we've got a ways to go, Dallas. But this is awesome, Dan. You know, Dallas, do you have any other quick follow-up questions? Otherwise, I think we're going to probably want to wrap it up here soon.
Well, you know, obviously I could sit here and talk, you know, to you about this for 2 days, 3 days straight. Not even sleep. Just go.
This is good stuff.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm a sponge when it comes to this kind of stuff. But my question to you is, I look at a guy like you. I enjoy reading your articles. And because you put in a lot of hard work, what is your take on, I guess you want to say, the quote-unquote hunting industry and how easy they make killing a big buck look?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of people are fooled by the hunting industry. I mean, I've hunted some managed land. I did do a couple hunts on a property in Iowa this year that was managed. I think I had 17 bucks come past me per day on average.
Jeez.
And I passed 150s every day.
Wow.
So, I mean, when you compare hunting like that to hunting the public land, I mean, those guys watching those shows, you know, you think about a young guy, he turns on the TV and he's watching those hunting shows, and he sees three Pope and Youngs walking out in an open field underneath this guy at noon, and the guy's trying to decide which one to shoot. When he goes out in the public land, and you see these guys set up like that, just like the TV, right on the edges of these fields and stuff, and you're like, you ain't going to see nothing in that field till midnight. You know, they're kind of misleading these young people with the way they do the shows. I understand they got to make kills to make a show and stuff, but it's not reality. It's not what the average guys are going through. And I think a lot of it, too, is biased in the fact that these guys want to be on TV and want to be in these shows so bad that they'll do anything, and they got to get money up to do that, and they do that through hunting products. And when these people are sponsored by these products, they have to sell them, and they have to say things about these products and stuff, and it ain't always true.
Yeah.
But I think that they make you think you have to have, you know, a $400, you know, scent-free suit. They make you think you have to have the latest call and all that stuff. And really, you know, I'm usually hunting in blue jeans. I hunt my tennis shoes a lot. I just wear a flannel shirt a lot of times. You know, sometimes I wear a camo jumpsuit. I usually have my bow, some arrows, a tree stand, sticks, a camera arm, and a camera. Nothing else. I don't have a pack, nothing. I just go out there the way I am, and that's how I hunt. And I think most people think you can't even, you know, hunt like that. You know, the way they portray it is kind of wrong, I think.
I guess no one can argue with your results. Is it right that you've killed over 30 Pope and Young bucks? Is that the right number?
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Dallas, you and I have got a ways to go, right?
We got a little more than a ways to go, my friend.
Well, I'm hoping, here's fingers crossed, to a good 2014. One more notch, hopefully.
That's correct.
But yeah, this is awesome, Dan. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing this. I think I can speak for Dallas in saying that we both learned a ton from everything you had to share today, and I think our listeners, of course, would too. So thank you.
And I think we're definitely going to have you on again, because, you know, I don't know about you, Mark, but I don't think the conversation's over yet.
Yeah, I agree. Like you were saying earlier, we could probably talk to you, Dan, for a day or two if you'd let us. But that said, you know, thank you as well to all the listeners today. Of course, you know, you guys mean the world to us. Thank you so much for spending about an hour here with us today. And if you have been enjoying the podcast so far, and I hope you have, you know, we would definitely appreciate it if you could also leave us a quick review on iTunes. It's super quick to do. It helps new folks find the podcast. And, you know, it helps me and Dallas from, you know, crying ourselves to sleep occasionally at night. So thanks in advance for that. And then, of course, you know, we want to thank our partners who help make this show possible. You know, that is a huge help to us, and it keeps us on the air and keeps the website going. So huge thank you to all those guys. That said, then, finally, be sure to visit wiredhunt.com/episode3 to view the show notes from today. We'll have some different links to some of the different articles that Dan has written in the past and to his website, thehuntingbeast.com. Definitely visit that. It's great stuff. So thank you again to everyone out there in the Wired Hunt Nation. And until next time, have a great week and stay wired to hunt.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.